Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 038.EX0711, certificate number 44722, the amazing Randy.
I have a little stunt I'd like to show you that yogis have been doing for years, and they took some people in at the Menninger Clinic with it a few years ago, and it was published in the National Enquirer, so it must be true.
You sound like you could maybe be a stage magician. I'm considering this for the first time. You have a white beard.
Yes.
And a baritone.
And a baritone. Step right up, everyone.
And you like people to look at you.
And let me make this rabbit disappear.
Watch my hands carefully.
I always admired magicians. I was at an event couple of years ago where they had hired a bunch of close-up magicians, and not goofy ones in top hats, but like cool kids that had like cool vibes.
I'm gonna do street magic.
Yeah,
this playing card has graffiti on it now.
And they were just kind of, you know, interspersed in the milling group of people at this event and doing magic, and you'd gather around. It was kind of like the Magic Castle, except not so
not
many
super lame.
Yeah, not so many velvet.
That's mean. That's mean.
Whatever.
I'm sorry, Neil Patrick Harris.
And I just loved it. I just, you know, I don't see how you can not love watching somebody do card tricks and little, you know, little sleights of hand.
It's the best. Yeah. I deplore our modern like Arrested Development meme. I think that that magicians are just lame.
No, they're not clowns. They're magicians.
I think nobody, you know, I think you had to grow up with Johnny Carson to think the magicians were cool. But I think now maybe comedy writers have taught American kids that magicians are goofballs.
For those who do not go to Hollywood every week like Ken, or spend a lot of time in Hollywood just, you know, shagging birds like me.
Shagging birds.
The Magic Castle is, or are you going to talk about the Magic Castle?
I'm not.
The Magic Castle
turns
is
out you are
a mansion in Hollywood that became like a clubhouse for magicians back in the whenever. And at a certain point, and it was just people in velvet tuxedos doing card tricks for each other for a long time. And then at some point in the 2000s, it became like a hipster field trip.
Yeah, you'd want to go to dinner there if you could find somebody with a membership.
But that's the thing. You had to be invited. Yeah. You had to go with somebody that was, you know, either in or knew somebody that was in.
You had to saw a lady in half in the foyer just to get admitted.
So part of what made it a hipster field trip was that it required this, you know, this special in, and not everybody could go. And there were a lot of people that wanted to go and didn't know a 75-year-old, you know, pull a rabbit out of a hat person. And so gradually, you know, the people that I knew down there, somebody would say, oh, I went to the Magic Castle, and everybody would be envious. Little by little, enough people had gone that it kind of opened up. It was a little bit like the Elks Club in Ballard here, where the first few people were like, Rainiers are only a dollar. And then pretty soon.
You know, oh, I didn't know that became a thing.
Yeah. But I finally went to the Magic Castle, and it felt by that point in time, just like
you had just missed it.
It was just a zoo in there, you know, and some of the stuff was really great. There were a lot of young magicians in there, but I feel like that whole Arrested Development storyline is a result of that one specific
Magic Castle getting over.
Yeah. Right. So
overexposed.
All the Hollywood writers, that's their one exposure to magic culture. And they all thought they were smarter than their hipster friends and by making it corny.
And maybe just knowing some teens that are into magic. You know, because that is a certain kind of a fixated kid that it's easy to have a little fun with.
But didn't you get a book on magic when you were a kid and practice it?
And made my parents watch.
I did too.
I was, the trick I learned that I remember is you pull things out of an empty paper bag, an empty grocery bag, but the only trick is that you've got a second grocery bag in the grocery bag. So you're just reaching between the seams and pulling out your props.
I had all those little put a coin in and then make the penny turn into a dime or make the, you know, just that kind of, I don't know, little garbage tricks.
Did you know our Jeopardy buddy Buzzy Cohen really wanted Magic Castle membership at one point? He had his whole audition. He was going to do a Jeopardy themed kind of a mind reading thing where you would force a certain answer, and no matter which category they picked, the response would work.
And his
game show themed magic. I think COVID hit, and then he changed his mind and never perfected the trick.
So he never did his audition.
No, but it's not too late for somebody out there that wants to do game show themed magic, Buzzy having abandoned it.
Buzzy Cohen is exactly the kind of Hollywood bow tie wearing hipster nerd that would want to be in the Magic Castle.
Everyone there looks like him, only more so.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're a skeptic?
Yeah.
Like when told about something, when someone tells you, hey, trees talk now.
Yeah.
Or is your immediate response to be like, hell yeah. Like, let's find out why the trees talk. Or is it like, no, they don't?
I think it's much more like, show me.
I see.
Show me how the trees talk, and I'll be the judge of that.
You're from Missouri.
That's right. I'm in a constant show me state.
A constant state of misery.
I mean, I got a lot of pushback from futurelings, a certain kind of futureling, let's say, when we did that trees talk, and I came down in a kind of mocking voice about woo.
Yeah, they all needed to up their dosage of lavender oil that day.
Well, because a lot of people were like, well, John doesn't have any magic in his life, and I hope that he's sad, and I hope that he just lays there with no meaning. And
that was me. That was actually that was my alt.
And I felt like, what are you talking about? I got a lot of magic in my life. Like, I believe, well, first of all, in Spooky Action at a Distance, I misuse that all the time.
We know you saw Ghosts in a New England Farmhouse once.
That's right. Ghosts in a New England Farmhouse. But I'm not an atheist. I'm not even an agnostic.
You're open to the possibilities of the universe.
That's right. We were just down in Savannah, and we went to church there. And every place I go to church.
Is that right?
Yeah. Every town I go to that I've never been to, I make a point to go to one church service.
You're trying to find it, like the hotel room sometimes has a list of services. It's Methodists, 9 a.m., St. Andrews.
It's usually, you know, I'm wandering around and I see a church that seems open and I wander in, and then I make a point to figure out when they do a service and I go back. So I'm always...
You just want free donuts, probably.
There's never donuts.
Really?
No, I just like to... That's Mormonism.
Organized religion is hard up enough that I think everybody has coffee and donuts now. The Mormons are in trouble because we don't have the coffee.
You know, that's right. I feel like if it's an 8 o'clock service, I get there at 7:59. And as soon as it's time to leave, I shake the hands of the minister and whoever else is there. And I'm right out the door.
But nobody's like... Look, fresh meat, a new person.
They always are. And that's why I look like I have somewhere to be. But so I'm skeptical, but I'm also very much like, show me the, all you have to do is show me.
You want to believe.
The mysticism. The problem with woo is that it so often.
Seems a little underbaked.
Well, it appeals to science, right? I mean, woo is constantly saying, no, there's proof that.
There's energy flowing into your into your Reiki muscles.
And that is the thing I'm skeptical of. And I think that comes from a lot of the debunking of magic and pseudoscience that happened when we were kids.
Yeah, this is a trend that goes back probably to the mid to late 19th century. I mean, the idea of skepticism, it's just a Greek word meaning inquiry, skepsis, skepsos, probably. And there were Hellenistic philosophers who were the skeptics.
Yeah, sure.
But they weren't necessarily like, you know, this medicine Doubters. Doesn't work or ghosts don't exist. It just meant they were constantly questioning the framing of everything, you know, like, oh, well, what is, you know, just epistemological stuff. How do you know that?
Yeah.
Like, do you trust your senses? How can you say that is truth? They seem pretty annoying.
They would have gotten really ratioed if they were on Twitter.
Because no matter what you could say, they're just saying like,
yeah,
I don't think you can know that at all, which must annoy fellow philosophers.
Yeah, right. Especially just your regular guys who are going to the bathhouses.
You think that's where most philosophy happens?
I do. And that's why, in an absence of bathhouses, we have so little new philosophy.
Where are the heterosexual bathhouses where I can go for my philosophy?
And they don't even have to be heterosexual.
No, not sure. At all.
We're open to all comers.
I just don't want to be, literally. I just don't want to be distracted. I just don't want to be distracted when I'm having philosophical musings.
Right.
By more earthly
affairs.
I mean, the early skeptics in the sense of, guess what? I don't believe that thing and I'm going to debunk it, were atheists. The problem, because, you know, there was really no other belief system to push back on in the West for centuries. It was the Catholic Church or nothing. And unfortunately, the Catholic Church, unlike today's practitioners of woo, had inquisitions.
Yeah, they did.
You were not executed for saying you don't believe in reflexology or whatever it was.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I was publicly denounced by the five woo listeners who
But they couldn't haul you off, behead you, and then pull out your tongue.
No.
As was done to Polish nobleman Kazimierz Jasiński in 1689.
No. I was never eviscerated or burned.
It was worse, but at the time,
worse than being burned alive.
Yeah, and worse than being beheaded and having your tongue removed. Actually, burned is worse than being beheaded and having your tongue removed.
I think burned is pretty bad.
It depends
on
the order.
Buried alive is worse.
What if they reverse the order? What if they remove your tongue and then behead you?
To not do it in that order seems like a missed opportunity.
It just seems like they've actually done you a favor.
Yeah, right. Behead me and then do whatever you want.
Exactly. I don't need my tongue anymore. You know who doesn't need, you know what's got two thumbs and no head and doesn't need his tongue? This guy.
It feels like they could take a lesson from the cartels who are really good at that. They pull your tongue out through your nose.
First.
Yeah, first.
While your head is still attached to your neck.
Yes.
This wasn't just Spain. Inquisitorial tribunals would meet all over Europe, and there's stories from the Netherlands and here Poland and Italy and, you know, of one thinker who dared to be a little too much like, well, how do you know what God wants, Archbishop?
Well,
and that guy didn't have a tongue the next day.
They did that to Joan of Arc, right? But she wasn't heretical. She was just...
Joan of Arc's not a new atheist.
That was just political, yeah.
But as time went on, religion began to... And atheism, the responses to religion began to morph a little. You got into the slightly safer post-Enlightenment forms of questioning. You get to deism where... Yeah. Well, of course, God exists. Who can say that he does not? But surely he's working through rational means that scholars can understand and define.
Thomas Jefferson's Bible.
Thomas Jefferson's Bible, where all of Jesus' quotes are in a different color and all the stuff he didn't think happened are in a third color. And
well,
we did Omnibus on this, right?
Yeah, but all of the founders are diehard Christians, right, Ken?
That's what Tucker Carlson told me. It's interesting to wonder to what degree there is internal unspoken atheism, because you can find Greeks and Etruscans and ancient Chinese and Hindu people all saying, well, what if there is no 4-8-armed blue guy, then what? Or perhaps these idols in our homes are only stone, you know? So the idea must have occurred to somebody that the invisible God that everybody's talking about, what if he's not there at all?
Well, I always feel this way about his story, Ken.
Is that what you call
his story Just that all that gets written down is the stuff that is written down by the writers.
Socially acceptable.
And of course there were.
Do you think every teen back then was like, they're making me go to church, but I don't, I never saw Jesus there.
I bet every teen, and well, not every teen, but I bet the goths and the new wavers.
Like literally the goths?
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah, the Visigoths?
All of the Visigoths. But also, no, anybody that's anybody, I don't think Benjamin Franklin got down on his knees and prayed.
Well, he was up in the middle of the night. He might have. What else are you going to do?
He's down on his knees for sure.
We should have picked a less horny founding father for this story.
Well, I'm getting, I don't know why. We haven't done a recording in a while. And, you know, you and I get all this pent up horniness.
I think you might be, projecting a little bit there. I don't know if it's both of us. The first explicitly atheistic tract in the English language written by a pretty big name.
Do you Erasmus.
Percy Bysshe Shelley, the great romantic poet.
Of course.
Got kicked out of Oxford in 1819 or 1820 or so for writing a little pamphlet called The Necessity of Atheism.
That was the first atheistic writing in English?
There does not appear to be an earlier explicit call to atheism.
Oh, wow. Well, that just made him doubly sexy to all the goth girls.
Well, yeah. Plus, you know, going down to Italy and
yeah,
whatever he did.
Yeah.
Dying or not.
Like unbuttoning his shirt to the second button.
Thinking about nightingales and the west wind and whatever else. But, you know, our current idea of skepticism, you know, there's still a lot of overlap between the skeptic movement and the atheist movement, particularly kind of this post-Randy, new atheist, Dawkins-type movement, you know, where we're going to call out everybody's superstitions, and it doesn't matter if it's seances or priests, they're all equally anti-scientific, and if we're going to defend critical thinking, there's an overlap there.
Well, but our tens of thousands of Gen Z listeners probably have a very different experience of the kind of online atheist Gamergate types who are on there all the time.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I think there's kind of been an acceptance that, or, you know, just kind of a, in the same way that magicians have come in for some overdue scrutiny, there was some turn that happened with online atheism a few years ago where everybody was like, look at these dweebs, like it borders on anti-Semitism sometimes, they're doctrinaire, they're irritating.
They're all into Bitcoin.
They're all into Bitcoin. Christopher Hitchens was pro the Iraq war for some reason.
I mean, I
these
know
guys are doofuses.
I know there are also tens of thousands of futurelings that are like, hey!
They're getting on their atheist alts to post about
I resemble that remark. We love all people.
We do, just like God loves you, atheists. Right. But has that seeped down to Gen Z, or is this generation so secular that they don't think that atheism's funny because it's just self-evident to them?
Well, what even is religion anymore?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like, and this is part of the critique of Wu, it just seems like your religion, it's like your religion can be whatever you say it is, and every person has their own take on it. And
Zoomers should know that the same, you know, those online atheists also think your horoscope is dumb. And if you're a Pisces, you're probably pretty angry about that.
You know, it starts with Presbyterianism, I think. As soon as you don't have a priest as an intercessionist, as soon as you're a Protestant and you don't have to go to get the absolution from the guy in the tall hat, and you've just got a one-on-one relationship with God? Come on.
That could be anything.
Yeah, you and God talking on the side? Like
I can't even, you know, if I'm trying to have a conversation in my head, I can't even do long division in my head. And I'm supposed to be carrying on a relationship all day with an invisible, inscrutable entity?
I blame John Calvin for a lot on a daily basis. But I feel like that's the biggest crime. Opening it up.
You want to see a guy in a collar.
Get a guy with a tall hat. And it's got to be a guy.
Wow. Speaking of history, but things changed quite a bit in the middle of the 19th century when the beliefs that people could inveigh against started to become falsifiable. You know, Shelley, it's easy for a Oxford
dandy. Yeah. That's the word you're looking for.
I was going to say showboating self-regarding individual,
yeah, dandy,
intellectual to to start talking about what he considers the obvious pitfalls of religion. And, you know, these arguments are centuries old, and it's all, well, if God's so good, why is there a war? And if the Bible's so true, why is John chapter whatever contradict Mark chapter whatever? I mean, some of these arguments are literally 250 years old, and they're going on Facebook right now.
But if you dance around Descartes for long, it doesn't really direct you to back to the church.
It does not. There are now alternatives. But, you know, it all seems kind of unknowable. Like, there's no smoking gun that Shelley's going to produce that will lead every Anglican priest to be like, he's got us. Archbishop of Canterbury's going to have to learn how to cobble shoes now.
And Kierkegaard's up there going, look at me.
Right. And even philosophers will be speaking in a language so elevated about religion and the epistemology of religious knowledge that,
pick your card.
That's not a smoking gun. But that all changed with the Christian spiritualist movement of the 19th century.
Which we've talked about on several
omnibus. It's come up a few times. This is going to be yet another omnibus where we learn about weird guys doing weird stuff in upstate New York. And it's the same time period. It's exactly when the Millerites and the Mormons and these Christian utopianists that we've talked about are all
the Oneida
coming into being up there. They all want a farm where they're going to throw off the shackles of what's gone wrong with society, and particularly what's gone wrong with Christianity, and they're going to get back to a cool new socialist way to live.
Generally, a lot of open marriages.
Right. And it all comes down to one thing. What if the guy who does your horseshoes has a hotter wife than yours? What then? Thinking about this, suddenly this 19th century phenomenon of suddenly everybody being interested in haunting houses and ghosts knocking on tables. And
where did that knocking come from?
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
I didn't. I don't know where that was. Oh. The problem is this table is felted, so the ghosts.
That's exactly what a ghost knock sounds like.
Do you need a felted table to do a seance? I mean, you and I always do the show holding hands around this table. So if there was going to be a manifestation.
It's so dark in here.
You'd think, the candle doesn't. I'm trying to read my notes, and these candles are getting very low. I was wondering the other day. Mindy and I were talking about this. We're like, where did all that come from at once?
Yeah. What happened?
I assumed, you know, because you always see these people in Noel Coward plays, all these mediums wearing turbans and stuff, I was like, it must have been the mystical East.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The British Raj subjugated hundreds of millions of people.
Trying to understand the Persians.
We learned about astral planes and reincarnation and different kinds of non-Western medicine, and suddenly Wu was born. But I don't think that actually is a data point. Like, I think that's kind of a later overlay, like in the maybe around the turn of the 20th century. I think these original ghost hunter soothsayer types were influenced by, you know, a few things happen. Christian mystics like Swedenborg start to say, hey, I've had first person mystical journeys, and if you don't, and if your priest does, if your pastor doesn't, there's a better, pure Christianity out there, and it's going to have gifts of the spirit. It's going to have manifestations, speaking in tongues and whatnot.
So this comes more from Shaker Quaker stuff than...
Yeah, and Quaker in particular. A lot of the people who adapted these movements were Quakers, because a lot of them were like left-leaning movements, these spiritualist...
Abolitionist.
People. Yeah, they were abolitionists. They were really into women's rights. They didn't feel like the existing religious structures were really... hotbeds of that, obviously. And they were going to all move to these communal farms and practice Christian socialism. And the women were empowered. You know, you look at these 19th century spiritualists, and a lot of them are women who could not have been religious leaders in their previous churches. So a lot of Quakers felt like this was the future, like women telling you what your dead grandpa's up to now.
Weirdly, we still think that.
It's true. Like, who are the great male psychics? There's that John Edward guy on, is he still around on cable TV? But, you know, if you go to a strip mall psychic next to the teriyaki joint, or at a carnival midway, somebody looking in a crystal ball, if that's a thing.
If you go and put a coin in the Zoltar machine.
See, Zoltar, I don't know Zoltar's pronouns, but he's coded as male.
Yeah, that's right. He's
Zoltar
got a beard.
Zoltar has facial hair.
And a turban. You know, there is a psychic by the teriyaki place right up here.
Is that right?
What is the connection?
I'm picturing one. There's one in Linwood.
They share a bathroom. Every mini mall.
You could go in there and be like, hey, predict what I'm going to order, lady.
I keep wanting to go get a foot massage at the massage place that's always next to the psychic, next to the teriyaki place. But I'm not that bold.
There's one I've driven by that has like, looks like a black hair place next to it, which is not super common in many parts of Seattle. But
in the part of Seattle you live.
No, this is actually up north where you might find you're outside the city limits and, you know.
Get a Vietnamese fingernail place and
I was wondering if it was the same person. Like, do you think the psychic also will like do weaves and stuff?
Oh, like flip the little
flip the sign.
Flip the
like
sign.
There's two doors, but you walk in and it's actually the same shop.
Oh, maybe.
Also, the Civil War happens, and if you think about it, this movement, you know, it kind of dawns in the Civil War era and extends to the post. You know, reaches England in the post World War One era.
Everybody wants to talk to their dead.
Everybody.
Son.
There's a missing generation, basically. And now there's a need. And then also I got to say, I think the Enlightenment didn't help. You know, you and I, you've talked about
in so many ways,
in so many ways, you've talked about how, it offends you when science starts to overlap with New Agey thought, but this goes,
well, no, it's the other way around.
Yeah. You think science just stay out and yeah.
Science just stands there. And then everybody, you
New
know,
age appropriates
everybody
it?
Dances around it and is like, no, I'm science.
I guess that's
no,
what I meant.
Science.
I didn't think that Nobel Prize winners were like, I'm going to really get to the bottom of acupuncture.
Except
for Linus Pauling.
The 14, Linus Pauling and the 14 Nobel laureates that endorse Elysium, the weird antioxidant pill that I take
is that
every
right?
day. Yeah.
And William Shockley, the inventor of the transistor who basically became a eugenicist.
Right. Well, that'll happen.
One out of 10 scientists is going to get really into eugenics at some point in their old age. A lot of the explanation for how these clairvoyants and seers were doing their work was couched in scientific terms. Like, you know, we know from the works of Edison and Alexander Graham Bell that there are new communication possibilities.
Right. The indisputable science of phrenology.
Well, I think they're thinking more of communication tech.
Oh.
There are waves. Messages can now be passed seemingly miraculously from Baltimore to Providence.
I see.
Clearly the next step, and Edison and Bell kind of believed this, the next step would be, how do we get those waves from the astral plane? You know, I want to speak to the etheric body of my late mother or my son who died at Vicksburg.
I think that's still a core of woo, right?
It's all waves.
It's waves.
It's energy.
Or energy. Yeah, energy. But it is, right, it never occurred to me that it would, that...
There was a time when waves and energy meant nothing and could not back this stuff up.
The miracle of electricity, which is, yeah, just a woo, 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 woo. It's like, well, how hard is that then?
It even makes a woo noise.
Woo, 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 woo,
woo, woo, woo, woo. So...
Did they understand that sound was a wave?
That's an interesting question. When? They must, right? Because, I mean, going back to Pythagoras, I mean, the Greeks understood that the resonance of objects was what caused pitch, and you could change the size of the thing that was resonating, and you would change the pitch.
Right, but it was...
You would assume that whatever it is moving at your ear.
Yeah, I guess at 1650, it says here, was the first concept of sound as a wave.
Sound as a wave. Because sometimes you can probably see it in a membrane. Like, that must have been what happened.
Or just in water.
Somebody yells too close to a lake.
Yeah.
To a birdbath.
Never yell too close to a lake.
Or a birdbath. The Christian spiritualist movement, which, you know, kind of still exists to some degree, although not at its early 20th century peak, traces itself back to 1848, the Fox Sisters... three sisters, two younger, they're in Rochester, New York. So again, upstate New York, two of them are quite a bit younger than the older and
they can see boogeymen.
For whatever reason, they felt their house was haunted. And the two younger ones realized that if they were cracking their toes at mealtimes or whatever in the parlor, they could fool their older sister. Margaret and Catherine were just cracking their toes.
And
she would be like, oh, that's the creak of the ghost. They're back. Do you hear that? And they thought that was pretty funny. But unfortunately, it's an Arthur Miller crucible kind of thing where it gets out of control and people start telling the neighbors.
But the older sister already had the idea that ghosts, A, and B, that they manifest themselves by making little tip-tap sounds.
Yeah, they were living in a place that was a house that kind of had a neighborhood reputation for being haunted. I don't know if something had happened there or if it's just the creepy-looking house. That sometimes happens. Mm-hmm. But, you know, stories of haunted houses, that also goes back to the ancient Greeks. There's a one of the philosophers talks about a man who died and then just returns to his home and just kind of chills. So
chills. He's not knocking over urns.
Yeah, I don't know how quickly you get to, you know, trying to communicate with the living, making the chandelier shake. For one thing, the chandelier has to be invented.
But yeah, well, I mean, there's always devils, bad.
Is this your
spirits?
Is this your view of the universe? There's always devils.
Look, there's always devils. But no, there've always been spooky baddies.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the idea, you know. In Christianity, there's biblical backup for, you know, the spirits that you might have to cast out.
Yeah. Right.
That's what Jesus and the apostles are always doing.
Okay, I've got it now.
So the Fox sisters become regional and eventually, you know, became a local sensation and eventually, you know, a nationwide name for their abilities because they start to hold events because it gets away from them.
And did the younger ones ever start drinking their own Kool-Aid and believe that they had, or did they always know it was a grift?
A central question to this story is how much the grifter knows he's a grift. And you can't watch anything about Randy and the charlatans he's doing battle with without thinking about that. To what degree have they convinced themselves that they are doing it or they're not doing all of it, surely, or I don't think your mind could deal with the fact that day in, day out, I'm just bilking
just a full liar.
Thousands of people out of their money. In 1888, one of them did confess.
The sister.
Yeah. One of the two younger sisters said, yeah, we were just cracking our toes. Here's how it works. The problem is she recanted the next, I think if you want to be a believer, the next year, I think it hurt the family business and reputation for her to admit that. And so the next year she was like,
no,
JK, it was real.
It was a spirit that made me do that.
Yeah.
It always makes me think of all the Air Force lieutenant colonels that 40 years later are like, oh, I saw 1,000 UFOs, but I wasn't allowed to say it. Or the, you know, there's always some JFK person that's like, well, actually, I was there and I did see Oswald and he was carrying a magic potion.
There's no way you couldn't tell anybody for 50 years if you saw an UFO.
Doesn't seem like it, but the UFO community is full of those, like, well, this guy worked for the CIA and he was silent for 40 years and then...
Here's what I think happens. People grow into elderly people, and elderly people like a good yarn. Hey, nobody's paying attention to me. I saw a UFO.
How long before that's me?
Right. So now that we have these kind of falsifiable phenomena that are actually using science to bolster their claims and crucially profiting by them. I mean, I guess that's not, I think you can't say the medieval Catholic Church was not profiting by its own belief system and dogma and superstition.
But that's the thing about all these early 19th century religious movements. How much of it is a profit motive of starting your own community?
Is it a profit motive with a PH or is it a profit motive?
Ooh.
Yeah, I've read a lot of writing about like modern scholars on Joseph Smith because I'm super interested in that time and that movement.
Why?
He's a good looking guy.
Uh-huh.
There's a Broadway musical now. And there's a lot of scholarly, you know, no scholars are actually debating, do you think God appeared to Joseph Smith?
No scholars.
Well, I mean, it seems beyond the realm of scholarship, really. You know, it's when it comes to falsifiable religion, I mean, when you're producing a golden book about ancient Mesoamerican Christians, that introduces a new wrinkle for sure.
Yeah.
But just going back to the, I had a mystical experience. That's not the kind of thing academics are likely to, and largely because in their world, it's, you know, it's
self-evident.
It's a moot point. Yeah, exactly. But a lot of the question is like, is somebody like that a pious fraud?
Yeah.
Clearly they're not seeing angels, but do they see angels? Like, are they in their mind's eye? Are they seeing the angels?
Well, that was the thing about me going to churches. It started when I was a lot younger and was open to religious experience.
Mm-hmm.
I had read The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James, and I was like, well, let's see a variety. Yeah, let's see what happens if you go to an Orthodox church and breathe in the incense. So I was, I think, susceptible to, if a painting had fallen off a wall or if somebody had hit me from behind with a boat paddle while I was sitting there going, give me a sign, you know, I think it would have been genuine but also like easily, I could have been easily wooed by something small.
Do you feel like that's the origin of the word woo? Because it woos people like you?
Maybe. Or maybe it's the wind through the ether.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When your daughter's learning how to drive and says,
"Baba, can I drive?"
You say,
"Híjole, here we go."
But what you should say is something that helps protect your ride.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And that's where State Farm comes in, to help you choose the coverage you need, so you can relax until you hear,
"Can we pick up my boyfriend?"
Wait, what?
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
One thing, you know, I've read and watched a lot of interviews with James Randi, who I promise we're going to get to. And one thing that I find interesting about him, it's kind of a charitable, kindly outlook he has, or at least professes to have. I think he soft pedals a lot of his contrarianism for the public, or did. He's passed away.
You think he's actually like a grouchy meanie?
No, I'm sure he's a lovely man. But I think if you wanted to get him talking religion as a pox kind of docking stuff after a convention, you probably could.
Yeah, right.
But not to the papers. But one thing he'll often say is that it's not just rubes. Like, anybody can be fooled. And it's not just because people are vulnerable, although he admits that that's the case. He says people are fooled because a lot of these charlatans are really good. He's like, I'm a magician. I'm a really good magician. I know that I'm great at this and my tricks confound and befuddle. It's super easy to get confounded and befuddled. So he chalks it up to the skill of the practitioner as to why, you know, whoever knocked that painting off that wall, possibly an angel.
You mean God?
Yeah. God through his angels.
Yes.
He's not going to come down and knock a painting off a wall.
God is everywhere and knows everything.
He's got supernovas to blow up and, orbs to whirl. So before we get to Randi, Randi sees himself as, continuing the work of Harry Houdini. Because it's kind of a funny phenomenon we have that these close-up magicians are also the ones who are explaining why herbal medicine is a crock. You know, it's kind of a weird crossover.
Yeah, they don't want to
stick to your juggling, dude. You're a vaudeville act.
But they never expose their own tricks. But they're really into exposing the tricks of other magicians who are claiming that it's real magic.
Well, they will say. Magicians are fundamentally honest. They will do a trick, but they will tell you it's a trick.
Yeah. Right.
And so Randi always thought it was a very different thing to keep his own secrets of how he was doing something versus a person who, I think in his mind, the mystic is not keeping any secrets. The mystic is telling you how the trick is done. He or she is just lying. They're saying this trick is being done because God speaks through me. This trick is being done because I can see ghosts. And he thinks, And this has victims. This is what got Houdini so mad. There's some the general cultural sense of Houdini is that he was a legitimate seeker for a time. That besides being the greatest magician and escape artist in the world, his mom had passed in 1913. He was living in a world where spiritualism was everywhere, and he wanted to know, do the dead really speak to these ladies in turbans? And it's not clear whether that's, again, him putting a kindly face on his investigations because he doesn't want to look inquisitorial. It's clear that later in his life when he spoke to some of, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle, do you know this, had a great kind of a frenemy ship?
No, I didn't.
Conan Doyle, the Sherlock Holmes creator, was gullible, perhaps, when it came to matters of spiritualism and would fall for every new fad and mystic.
How funny that Sherlock Holmes was the opposite of that.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a great irony, but Conan Doyle never saw a phenomenon that he could not chalk up to. I mean, famously, he fell for the, what are they called? The Coddington fairies or whatever. Do you remember this story where these little Victorian girls were saying they were taking photos of fairies in their garden?
Oh yeah.
And it all, there was a movie, I think, with Harvey Keitel. I can't remember. And it was all, it all turned out to be photographic trickery, but Conan Doyle believed every single one of these, and Houdini would kind of feign curiosity about his acquaintance's new interests. But it's possible that he was just trying to, you know, doing it in order that he could then tear down these beliefs.
Yeah, you don't want to be, you don't want to be the guy that's like, bull pucky. You want to be like, oh, show me,
yeah. And Houdini hated this stuff. First of all, as a and Randy says the same things. He hates it as a magician. You know, this is my profession, and people are misusing my tools of dexterity and prestidigitation for untoward ends. And secondly, he saw that who they were preying on. You know, it made him mad that they were just finding wealthy widows and then just bilking them by telling them
that their Civil War son, who's been dead 50 years, still wants to.
I'm talking to your industrialist husband, Cyrus, and he still loves you and misses you every second. But, you know, but Houdini would, because he knew how to do all these tricks, he could walk in, he could immediately see how the medium was doing this, that, or the other. There's a famous story of him telling Conan Doyle, no, that medium did not do that. Here, look at this. And he gives him four round cork balls and a little tub of paint and a slate. And he says, now cut open one of these balls.
I got that for Christmas.
Every child loves this classic toy. Four cork balls.
A tub of paint
and a slate. He gets Conan Doyle to cut one of the balls open to show that it's not doctored in any way. And then he says, leave the house, go walk down the street, write down a message on a piece of paper, fold it and bring it back. And Conan Doyle comes back with the message written down. And Houdini proceeds to suspend the slate in the air somehow, rolls the balls in the paint and sticks it to the slate. And the ball starts to move on the slate and writes out a message. And what's more,
without Houdini holding the ball,
right? The ball is just moving on the slate of its own accord. And, a word at a time, the message that the creator of Sherlock Holmes had written down on the paper in his pocket is formed. And then Houdini says, this is better than the act that the madam whatever did, right? And he's like, this is amazing. And he's like, well, it's a trick. It's all a trick. And he doesn't tell him how he does it. That's what's interesting about these debunkers is they can't tell you how they duplicated it, because that would give away the tricks of their trade. But he says, I promise you it's a trick. And there's some belief today. We now know that Houdini had bought the act of a music hall magician named Beryl, a French guy, who had a very similar trick, and it was just done with magnets. You know, you force the regular cork ball on the person to cut in half, but you secretly have a one with a metal center.
Yeah, but how do you know the message?
That's, I think, it's just a simple switch. The most common way to do it would be Conan Doyle gets back in the room. Houdini says, did you fold the paper? Conan Doyle takes it out to show him. He says, oh, you only folded it once? And he takes it and folds it six more times for security.
Yeah.
And then palms the message and gives him a fake one back.
Right.
He has to switch it back at the end. So probably, you know, pretty simple. You know, once you hear it, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
But he's got a confederate with some kind of the part I don't understand is how the slate is suspended. But some kind of confederate with a rod is moving the ball on the other side of the slate. So, and then the funny thing is Conan Doyle's response is, why are you, obviously such a gifted medium and psychic, pretending to be a charlatan? Like, I can see your gifts and they're self-evident. Stop pretending to be a conjurer, a common conjurer. Like, he would rather believe that Houdini is lying to him than believe that his priors about the astral plane are not true.
This kind of always is suggested. At what point is a grift a criminal exploitation? And at what point is it just a nice kind of, you pay $15 to go to a movie. If you pay $15 to go to somebody and they tell you that your ex or your dead husband still loves you, it's kind of a wash. It's only when people tell you that the election was faked and that you should take to the streets with the pitchforks that it feels. And where is that line?
Right. You know, it's easy to find Randy inveighing against what I take to be pretty harmless forms of magical thinking. Yeah. You know, I think he, in general, he thought that there should be a broader sense of critical thinking in society. And if there was, but does it really do any harm if somebody's believes in their horoscope? You know, he would rant and rave about astrology, and I'm thinking, who is being victimized by astrology, you know?
I feel like a lot of the woo movement, it really helps people. They go, they get into yoga, they go to retreats, they do...
Dinner last night, my wife was telling me that she has a couple friends, like that, I think a couple of them have like Ivy League educations, they live all over the world now, affluent, and they both are super into numerology and both have private numerologists that tell them what their lucky numbers are and what the best day to do such and such a thing is and what their license plate should be if possible, and who is being harmed if these wealthy ladies are.
Yeah. Is it about how much they get bilked? Because if you're a billionaire
right.
and you get bilked $100 million, who cares?
But you know, Randy, as we'll see, is much more exercised about things that have real world consequences. I mean, you mentioned disbelieving election results, but what about disbelieving your doctor's diagnosis?
Right.
I mean, this stuff can be life and death.
But that's a mid-19th century. There's a whole religion based on that.
We've already done Mary Baker Eddy, right?
Yeah.
The other night I parked in Pasadena and was shocked to find the beautiful old building I was in front of was a Christian Science reading room.
Did you go in?
Palatial. And I was late for a play. So I did not humble get to brag. Hang out with the Christian. Yeah, real humble brag. Hey, ladies, I was going to a musical.
Hey, guess what? I still go to plays.
I had my gloves and my silk gloves and my opera glasses. They would have kicked me out of the reading room. But Houdini, you're right, does appear to be, like, as you say, one of these people who believes this is a grift and it should be illegal. He spent the next 35 years of his life investigating, you know, in addition to being a great, you know, a headline draw magician and escape artist. He spent 35 years investigating hundreds of frauds. You know, there was a Boston medium that Scientific American was actually, so Scientific American, huge publication at the time. And actually now in a time when we think of these pseudosciences as part of science, they're like, we think this guy's legit. And they're offering a reward for anybody who can prove him wrong. And Houdini swoops in and takes the $2,500 reward. But it actually got to Congress. In 1926, Houdini was able to get enough politicians to call congressional hearings on, should mediumship be outlawed? The question you ask, like, to what degree is this a con that where the FTC should step in?
Well, wait. Well, how do we know once rewards started being offered that Houdini didn't have an accomplice who was pretending to be a medium that he could debunk and collect the money?
Well, this is interesting because later, when we get to Randy's 20th century post-Houdini debunkings, there actually is that kind of thing where Confederates are being used to work both sides, not for profit margin,
yeah,
but just to utterly disgrace a lot of these paranormal investigations. So Houdini goes in front of Congress and he sits there in front in a hearing room and duplicates all these tricks.
Oh, I wish that there was film of that.
I know. Like, he, representative whatever from Maine says, no, I've heard these voices. And Houdini takes out a little ear trumpet and like says, Congressman. He realizes, oh, this is what's being done. Unfortunately, Houdini was Jewish and a lot of these spiritualist movements still professed a Christian religious conviction. So he got a lot of pushback from a lot of anti-Semitic pushback. Like, who is this little Jew coming in here telling us that our religion is false mysticism?
I had no idea that was a component.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That this is at the time, this is good Christian religion.
Yeah.
And it's the criticism of it that seems un-American and un-Christian.
Still true to this day.
And Houdini would always, you know, because these people would always see Houdini duplicating their things and they'd say, well, this is just like the Book of Exodus where Pharaoh's occult magicians
can
do. It's funny because we think of these as people as the occult practitioners.
Oh, right. And but they're claiming that
Houdini is the occult conjurer.
Oh, he's doing some devil's work to imitate our real Christian.
Yeah. And maybe not literally devilry, but he's, you know, it's devilish to use fake means to duplicate these real miracles. And it's the same thing Uri Geller would always say to Randy, that, you know, you can forge the Mona Lisa, Randy, with your tricks, but that doesn't make you Leonardo, like me.
Right.
And Houdini would always say the same thing when they would say, how dare you crucify our Lord again. You know, it's anti-Semitic Christ killer stuff with this persecution, this tirade. And he would always say, look, Jesus was a Jew and he wasn't charging $20 for a healing.
Oh, burn.
Zing, got him. But the bill eventually died in committee. It was too, but it, you know, this made headlines all over the country, the Houdinis telling Congress how these swindlers do their work. And it creates this new paradigm going into the 20th century where you've got the mystics who are, we assume, charlatans. They're always trying to keep one step ahead of the skeptics.
Now, were there
the investigators.
Houdini stands in the time? Like, did he have his own kind of not just that he was a popular draw,
but like people who have been on the internet being like,
Is that
Elon Musk, sir? Mr. Houdini, sir, I love your show.
Is that just a 21st century phenomenon where any kind of celebrity has like a mini army of nerds that are out there fighting the fight?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, as an entertainer, he would have had, you know, crowds of fans wherever he went. And famously, it killed him.
Right.
His fans were a little too into his act.
That's true of everyone, so...
Everyone gets killed by a fan?
Yes.
I thought it was just Houdini and John Lennon.
To our listeners who are thinking of starting their own podcast, let me dissuade you.
If you see John or me in a public place, do not think that we can take a punch to the stomach. Do not rupture any of our organs. But I think this idea that, I mean, certainly he did inspire a generation, though, because that brings us to 1928, Toronto, Canada, and the birth of a young boy named Randall Zwingli, I presume it's pronounced.
Oh, he's Canadian.
He's Canadian.
Oh, so he's trying to rob us Americans of our beautiful Christian.
Right. If it's not the turn of the century Russian Jews or wherever Houdini's family was from, it's a Canadian coming across the border. But he later settled in Florida, so one of these Canadians that wanted America's best.
Sure.
Fort Lauderdale. Young Randall Zwingli happened to see the great magician Blackstone as a child. Blackstone was one of the, you know, probably the foremost stage magician of his day. In fact, I think two of his sons became magicians. Harry Blackstone Jr. was the guy with, I don't know if you remember this guy with the black beard that would always be doing close-up magic and mentalism on talk shows and variety shows when we were a kid. Anyway, Harry Blackstone was his dad. He was a second-generation magician. And Randall was transported by this. This changed his life. He kind of came from probably a typical family of the 1920s, kind of closed, not a whole lot of open emotion or expression. And I think even as a kid, he realized that he liked boys and not girls. Mm-hmm. He stayed in the closet until the movie Milk was released. He was like, oh, all my friends are right. Like the times have, you know, because all his friends knew, but he wasn't publicly out until he saw Sean Penn play Harvey Milk. And he was like, my friends are right. This is a new time. Like this movie's winning Oscars. And he came out as gay. Huh. But it kind of alienated him from his tight-lipped, emotionally constipated family. And at, I think, 16 or 17 years old, he literally ran away and joined the circus.
Yes.
Which was still...
Happens.
It was the only way to get into show business then, because he didn't have American Idol and and TikTok. And he became the Great Randall. And eventually, shortened to the Amazing Randy, he decided he would have that be his last name. So Randall Zwingli became James Randy.
So he was a magician in the circus.
He was. And an escape artist. He loved Houdini, like all the kids of that generation. You know, Houdini was their guiding star. To this day, you know, Magic Castle is going to be a big Houdini love fest.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, he became a prominent enough magician and escape artist that there's TV footage of him on both sides of the Canadian border back to the 50s. He's kind of even as a young guy, he's losing his hair. So he's kind of a Lenin looking.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a magician looks just like Vladimir Lenin doing amazing escapes. He's getting tied up with 200 feet of rope. He's in a coffin. He's frozen in ice. He's suspended by in a straitjacket upside down over Niagara Falls. These are all big classic Houdini escapes.
They all give me tremendous anxiety. I don't like him at all.
Are you? You should admire him because they give you anxiety. He's out there escaping from blocks of ice, so you don't have to.
Yeah, but I know that that's a that's the logic behind people watching horror movies. Yeah. Like they love the
That's why women listen to true crime podcasts.
But
John,
I feel like I do not want to feel that way. And it is not fun to feel those bad feelings.
It's nerve-wracking to watch.
Yeah.
And there's a famous case where he couldn't get out of the milk can, whatever mechanism, whatever trick he was counting on to get him out of the milk can filled with water up to the brim.
Right.
Fails, and you know, he as they stuff him in, he can hear his own vertebrae cracking, and then Ouch. He can't get out. And finally, 20 minutes later, terrified people let him out. And
what?
He's taken to the hospital. He's if it's the footage I've seen, it's some variety show that William Shatner is hosting, and he doesn't get to do it because in rehearsal it went terribly wrong, and instead he gets rolled on stage in a gurney to explain why he won't be doing the milk can escape.
Eek.
But these are all classic Houdini escapes that he is trying to one up the master. You know, he sets world records of the longest time in ice, the most links of chain escaped from, the highest straitjacket escape. And he goes around the world doing this. But at some point he starts to age out of the escapes, you know, the almost dying on for some, the good of some William Shatner hosted Circus of the Stars maybe sours him a little bit.
You got to be kind of limber to get through all these small hatches.
It's a young man's game.
Yeah.
You know, you're presumably having to wriggle into weird contortionist positions to get out of the ropes or the chains.
Dislocate your own shoulders.
At some point, you don't want to have a lockpick hidden up your urethra because you got to pee three times a night.
Mm. I think those are unrelated.
No, you have to remove the lockpick every time you pee.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's the worst. And, you know, if you look at footage of him at this time, he's amazing. He's, the amazing Randy. He's got this snow white beard and just, he has this kind of saintly affect, eventually scholarly, spectacles. And he just seems like, a nice old professorial type with an amazing gift for gab and patter because he's a stage magician.
Yeah.
You see him on Merv Griffin or Mike Douglas or whatever it is. And they'll be like, well, can you get out of that, Randy? And he'll be like, does Dolly Parton sleep on her butt? Of course I can. You know, hilarious
'70s. That is hilarious.
'70s witticisms that will never come back.
References to Foster Brooks.
That's what people wanted. But as we've covered in previous shows, this was also a time, this kind of 1970s era America, is a time when woo really resurfaces.
Yeah. We eventually need to do just an episode on 70s
Time Life books.
Yeah, right. Bermuda Triangle.
Leonard Nimoy coming on your syndicated TV every afternoon and telling you that there really is a Mothman.
You should have a film festival at your home theater where we watch all of the spooky Bigfoot episodes.
Of In Search Of. And that goes into our childhoods. You know, yeah. We kind of grew up in a world where we thought of this. Yeah, this is the world. People will always just be talking about Bigfoot and the Bermuda Triangle a lot. And that's why we do.
Even in the late 90s, we sold a cryptozoology magazine, the Fortean Times.
Is the Fortean Times still around?
I bet it is. Huh. But I remember reading the Fortean Times, and there were still teams out there in the Darien Gap looking for chupacabras.
Like his hero Houdini, Randy is incensed that people are out there, charlatans are out there using the, you know, his own carefully perfected skills to lie and cheat and bend spoons. Yeah. So the kind of the early manifestation of this is an Israeli self-described psychic named Uri Geller, who in 1973, this is the part of the story, I always just picture him on variety shows, you know, wowing Dinah Shore. Mm-hmm. But you know how he came on the scene? By persuading the Stanford Research Institute that he had paranormal powers. It was quite mainstream. The idea of parapsychology was still mainstream at this point.
Yeah.
And this is what's changed between then and now, you know, because now you'll still have people getting their tarot read and, you know, having reflexology done to them and taking homeopathic remedies. You know, all the woo is still out there. But there's not like a real big mainstream academic establishment propping up the idea that ESP is probably real. We just need to do the tests right.
I remember telekinesis being talked about in Time magazine as a thing that we knew happened. We just couldn't explain
it. We just have to
yet.
Nail it down in the lab.
Yeah.
Remember the Zenner cards, the stuff that Bill Murray uses at the beginning of Ghostbusters?
Yeah, right.
And you just have the idea that, yeah, universities were full of people.
How many dots are on this card?
You know, doing mind reading and trying to figure out what percentage of the population can do mind. That was the question, right? Yeah. Like, who are the mind readers? Where are they? Because clearly, this must be real.
And funny that by Ghostbusters, that was a gag, that it was all fake.
By 84, we understand that Bill Murray's just
doing that with the cute girls.
With the cute girls. He wants to electrocute the nerds. Who had it coming? But like in this world where, you know, big university money is going into these studies, Uri Geller manages to persuade the Stanford Research Institute that he can bend spoons, stop and start watches, you know, make your car keys warp. It's all very funny to me. You watch his act now and you think, if this guy really does have mental powers and all these Nobel-winning scientists are credulously nodding their heads, why can't he just do it in a cool way? Why does it always look so much like a parlor trick? Why does it look so much like sleight of hand? All right, now I need a Confederate to hold one end of the spoon while I begin rubbing. It all just looks like an act.
Yeah.
And yet, Randy is just aghast that two Nobel-winning scientists are like, we believe that Mr. Geller has the power of telekinesis.
I mean, he'd be an incredible car thief. Cat burglar. Why wouldn't you be the Pink Panther?
Yeah, like, are the guest fees really that good on the Mike Douglas show? Like, what is he getting for that? I'm sure he's got a live act.
Yeah.
He must have toured.
Sure.
But
ruining spoons everywhere.
But Randy sees this guy on the news, you know, with scientists kind of straight-facedly saying, Mr. Geller from Israel can, of course, bend spoons. And Randy's like, that act is 100 years old. He would often say, this used to be on the back of cereal boxes. And I think he believed that, you know, that he came from a world where everybody knew this kind of stuff was a vaudeville act.
Right.
And now we're in a world where Stanford is validating it. And he said, I looked at this and the two scientists who ran these tests, it wasn't their field. Everything was done wrong. One of them was legally blind. And he said, I don't, he has the opposite priors. He's a contrarian.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's where a lot of this kind of skepticism, new atheism movement comes from. I don't want to say it's always smug and pedantic, but there is kind of a certain self-congratulatory feeling of everyone else goes to church, but not me, the smart man.
But how, I mean, it would seem like if it was, it would seem, Ken, if it was a trick, that Randy would have just gone on the Mike Douglas show and bent spoons and been like, ta-da, end.
Well, this is what happened. It basically became a 5-year road trip of him following Geller around the country. Debunking every trick he did. So the famous thing that happens is Geller gets booked on Carson, and Randy's been on Carson many times. They know of him as a skeptical debunker of things, in addition to being a magician and escape artist. And they call him and they say, if Geller's cheating, what do we do? And Randy's like, yeah, I've seen the tape from Stanford. You know, Geller can tell which of these objects has been handled by a Confederate or by a third party while he was out of the room. And he just does it by spinning the tray, and then he can kind of see which objects might have moved there's just physical signs. What you want to do is make sure a layer of rubber cement keeps these objects from moving when the tray spins. You know, don't give him a tray that can spin. Give him a fixed table and use a little rubber cement so that when they're placed up and down, they can't move. And, when they're chosen, they don't move. And sure enough, Geller comes out and Johnny challenges him, and he hems and haws and says that the vibrations are wrong and he needs more time. And they cut to commercial, which I think is 40 minutes in studio.
What? The commercials were 40 minutes long?
Well,
yeah, the Carson show?
No, I mean, typically
we had a lot of patience.
Typically he was taping to time, but Geller's stalling. And so the home audience on NBC just sees more to come. And then 2 minutes later, we're back. But really 40 minutes has gone by. Johnny's now smoking a cigarette. And Geller is still looking perplexed and says that my powers are not strong. If you've never seen the Uri Geller tape, you can see why America falls in love. He's a very handsome man with just, you know, gleaming white, even teeth and a beautiful, luxurious head of flowing hair.
I remember it from the time.
And kind of an aquiline nose. He looks like a
a mystic.
A king or an emperor from a distant time.
I didn't see it.
The accent's live on TV,
but it was so much in the, you know, everything that happened on the Carson show was news, weirdly. Even though there was an Arab-Israeli war happening, there was also, you know, Dean Martin was ashing his cigarette into. And anyway, I remember it. I remember it being a news topic.
Uri Geller would just go on every talk show, and a frustrated Randy would come on the show a week later and show them how he did it, because again, that would break the. He's giving Geller a magician's respect, even though Geller is claiming to not be a magician. But he would duplicate all the tricks. You know, Barbara Walters shows him the car key of hers that he had bent, and she's like, I feel like it has. Now it's like a talisman to me. I have kind of these magical powers.
I haven't been able to leave the studio a lot.
Right. I can't start my car. And Randy takes an identical key and does the exact same thing. And she's just like visibly deflated, you know, like way to take the mystery out of the world, Randy. But you know, whoever it is, Merv Griffin, there's a Bill Bixby for some reason, the hosts of Real People. Randy's out there just showing Byron Allen Sarah
John
Purcell
Davidson.
And Skip Stevenson. Yeah, exactly. That's incredible. But I'm sure they were on That's Incredible. I totally forgot That's Incredible.
Yeah, it was a good show.
What a trio. John Davidson, quarterback Fran Tarkenton.
That's right.
And maybe Kathy Lee Crosby or somebody like that. Crazy. But they knew all the amazing feats and possibly cryptids.
Think about all the cat videos that they didn't have access to. I mean, it's half my Instagram feed now. Cats in Japan that are climbing into Coke bottles.
If the camcorder had existed then, we had to wait maybe 7 more years for America's Funniest Home Videos to bring us into the internet age. But because of this, he becomes, and he publishes, and he, what he sees is people still keep believing Geller. He publishes a book that he believes will expose Geller. Geller just keeps touring and saying, who is this man who persecutes me and my great powers, you know? Because he's Israeli, he has this very hard to pin down accent that really makes him sound kind of unearthly and authoritative. It's great. He's really good. But you know, the ARPA, you know, the Department of Defense is sending people to study Geller because they've heard that the Soviets are going to beat us with their mind readers.
Yeah, they're going to bend all our spoons and we won't be able to.
Well, what if they could read our dossiers? What if a Soviet mind reader could stand next to our ambassador and find out where the, you know, where, what the launch codes are.
Is this men stare at goats business?
Yeah, I think the era might not quite overlap, but there definitely are a bunch of weirdos in ARPA who are like, we cannot have a telekinesis gap.
Right. I never saw that goats movie. Was it good?
I don't think so. I think it might be famously bad. I'm trying to remember. I did see it though. But Randy kind of becomes a household name. He, as a result of this, he tours with Alice Cooper, you know, kind of supervising his over the top stage magic that he'll do in his tour, you know, when he gets his head cut off or whatever happens.
Yeah.
He guests on Happy Days. But he continues doing a lot of really high profile debunkings. Geller,
while also still doing magic as a professional,
to some degree. I mean, to the end of his life, there was not a gathering that he would not just delight with some card trick you'd never seen before. Like, he could not help from showing off a great trick, and being in his 80s and 90s did not dull his dexterity one bit, friends say. But he actually did retire from escape artistry.
Yes.
You know, he announced to a Japanese TV crew that this would be his last suspension from a helicopter or whatever, because he was outgrowing it. And I think he really did think this was going to be his mission, you know, to bring back a spirit of scientific inquiry and critical thinking that was being lost in a sea of pseudoscience.
Just like the Omnibus Project.
Exactly. Despite the Stanford Research Institute putting all their chips on Geller, there still were no shortage of, you know, $500,000 grants that were going to organizations to prove psychic powers.
Yeah.
So Randy is contacted by one particular researcher for something they're calling Project Alpha. You know, so we want you, now that we know what you did to Geller, we want you to make our tests charlatan proof. And he sends them a list of protocols and rules. But at the same time, Randy arranges for two of his magician confederates to apply to the program as fake psychics and to try to subvert these rules that he's writing.
Fun.
So this cat and mouse game goes on for years with these guys reporting back to Randy, hey, they totally disregarded the thing you told them about, you know, the temperature of the tray. And he's like, oh, okay, I'll tell them. And so Randy is like, you got to make this test harder. And then the guys have to figure out ways around Randy's safeguards. And but they start to feel terrible. This goes on for years, and they're essentially rooking these. They've got Stockholm syndrome about these scientists, and they feel like we are just lying. Because the scientists are so hopeful every time they see them, you know, spin a thing under a bell jar or read a mind or whatever it is. And they just start to feel like they're doing something unethical. And Randy's like, we have to do it. Like, when this is unveiled,
yeah, right,
it'll tear down this whole fraudulent building. But the scientists, you know, are telling TV audiences, yes, you know, as we up the controls, the gift does seem to statistically lessen, but it is still present, you know, and it.
Yeah, right.
Which, how can they even say that? If the gift is getting less with the controls, what the?
Yeah, you're just making it.
Clearly they were faking some of the stuff.
Well, or
it, the, it's their concentration is.
Yeah, the vibes, the, what, exactly. What were you saying? The waves,
the
are.
The aura of the.
They're, yeah, not, it's not quite powerful enough to penetrate tin, but it can get through aluminum.
In the 80s, one of probably Randy's greatest showman moment comes on the Johnny Carson show. He has, he's been really getting interested in the boom in faith healing, all these revival preachers, tent shows. I mean, we're not quite into the big televangelist with a private plane era yet, but we're just a few years away. And a lot of these guys are, you know, they're just selling out a big civic center and,
yeah, you know, snakes and
pounding somebody in the forehead and then their diabetes or whatever it is cured. And this is the kind of thing that really offended Randy. He wrote a whole book about it because he thought people were going to die. And,
yeah, right.
And he's right. You know, people were choosing not to get chemo. They were going to go down to Guatemala and have a psychic surgeon pull pig entrails out of their stomach. Have you seen that thing, the Andy Kaufman thing?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they, you know, these guys would just say, yeah, I can pull the impurities and the tumors out of you. Lie down. And they would show their empty hands like a magician and then put their hands on the guy's belly and just pull out a series of gross gunk and blood. And there would not be a scar or an incision or a hole. Because they had used their psychic powers.
Genius.
To pull out your tumor.
I think about that all the time, but I always.
This thing you just heard of?
I'm always imagining that UFOs are going to come and they're going to use UFO powers to fix my my broken ACL.
UFOs don't make an incision, but that's because they go in through the anus.
Oh, right. I was hoping they wouldn't do that. I was hoping it would just be, you know, something.
Well, I mean, if the problem is your colon, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you've got a headache, you don't want them coming in through the rectum.
It's really my joints.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my teeth were all knocked out when I was a kid.
And you think aliens are going to abduct you, but instead of
regrow my teeth. How hard is that?
Do you, in this scenario, do you feel like they've spotted you as a good test case because of your fake teeth? And they're like, hey, this is the guy we need to try out our teeth growing.
No, that I'm a test case for their intermediary between aliens and humans. So they would appoint me as kind of like a spokesperson.
Oh, because you've got alien vibes. You understand their culture.
Exactly. Like, well, I understand human culture enough that I would be like, hey, look, you can trust me. The aliens are weird, but like I've got a sort of grip on their vibe. And they've also like replaced my ACL, so my knee doesn't crack anymore. And so let them take over the world.
These kind of faith healings are perfect for Randy because he feels like his self-righteousness can be untrammeled. And he's not wrong. Like, these people need to go to I think that today about maybe people who should be going to a doctor instead of a chiropractic or a medium or a homeopathic remedy guy.
But Randy keeps clean. He's never accepted a false dollar.
Right. You know, he's not getting, I mean, he continues to get paid as an entertainer, you know, he'll make his money the honest way. And he, you know, at this time, the big name in Christian revival faith healing is this guy named Peter Popoff, who looks exactly how you'd expect, you know, kind of conventionally handsome and tan with a well-greased, well-pomaded dark hair. And he would just tell people at his big revivals to, you know, throw away your medicines. I want you, those of you in the balcony, empty your pill bottles now because I'm going to heal you all, you know? And Randy's like, what? Don't throw out your You're going to have a heart attack. Please don't throw out your blood pressure medicine.
Why did you bring your blood pressure medicine to church with you today?
So to Randy, this guy's the biggest scoundrel, and he watches tape of him, and he's like, oh, this guy's, he's just doing like the most basic cold reading mentalism act, you know, where he'd be like, somebody whose name has an A or an E. Yes, exactly. It must be your husband, Edward. Now I'm seeing a body of water. Oh, he grew up in Chicago. You know, this kind of crap.
Right.
And this is exactly what this guy's doing at church. And Randy's like, this is bull. So he gets a surveillance expert friend of his to go backstage dressed as a security guard at one of this guy's big revivals or crusades. Isn't that what Billy Graham would say? Goes to one of his big crusade in San Francisco that he knows is being captured on camera. So there's going to be video of it. And he's like, because he notices this guy's wearing a hearing aid. And he's like, this is how he's doing. And he's got a Confederate.
Yeah.
And sure enough, this surveillance expert thinks, you know, there's a lot of ways they could be doing this. I don't know if this is going to work. But he's hiding in the wings and adjusting his equipment. And then he finds the frequency. And he hears high heels walking up. And a woman's voice is like, hey, Petey, I hope you can hear me. If not, you're in trouble, teehee. All right, here's the first one. Rosemary Pierce. And, you know, and you can hear Popoff be like, is there a Rosemary Pierce here? And what happened is all these guests had come in and been asked to fill out like a prayer request form where they all wrote down their name, address, and malady. And you'd think they wouldn't be amazed when Popoff then said, I see your house at 118 Westchester Drive. You know, and they're like, whoa, how did they know? And the angels are surrounding it. You're being held up by angels right now. And I know you're worried about your husband's pancreas, but, you know, and he would do his,
I believe it. Do me next.
Well, that's what, you know, Randy would send Confederates to these meetings, and they would be like very moved, you know, because they were seeing genuine emotion, not from this charlatan, but on the part of the people who thought they were being healed.
Yeah.
So all these guys, they can feel the religious fervor, and they understand the effect that this has on people. So Randy just goes on Carson the next week and says, nobody's seen this yet, but check this out. This is one of Popoff's crusades. And he shows the video of the night, but he has recorded the hearing aid.
Oh,
so he syncs it up. So you can hear the voice say, Elena Gutierrez. And then you can hear Popoff be like, is there Elena Gutierrez here? And you can hear the guy being fed everything.
And did this debunk Popoff and he lost his...
He declared bankruptcy within a few years.
Yeah, good.
The sad thing, you know, I was watching this documentary, a very good documentary about Randy called An Honest Liar, and Geller's interviewed him. All these people are still around, you know? They just had to change their shtick.
Yeah.
Popoff, and Randy bemoans the fact that, you know, by exposing these guys' tricks, basically they just had to switch to something dumber. At least their old tricks were good. You see a commercial of Popoff trying to, on some Christian TV channel, charging $150 for the magical spring water that saved all the Christians at Chernobyl.
Right.
Because you probably know this. Everybody at Chernobyl got radiation sickness, except for all the Christians that were using this magic spring water.
Oh, I did not know that.
Well, I didn't either, but I've seen Popov's commercial. Geller still sells crystals on QVC. I mean, he's kind of changed. He's now a mystifier.
Whoa, a mystifier.
Instead of a psychic.
That's a little flipperoo.
It seems like it's chosen specifically to not claim powers or not.
Yeah, right.
You know, a magician is fake, maybe.
A mystic is real. A psychic is real.
A mystifier?
Mystifier.
Because you could be mystified by real things and real powers and tricks, I guess. Even Randy didn't like magician. I think he preferred conjurer, maybe, because, you know.
It seems more old-timey.
Well, a magician would be using magic.
Oh, I see. A conjurer.
To a scientist, magic does not exist. You know,
But a conjurer sounds like a D&D character.
Exactly. To me, conjurer has very old-timey occult vibes that to me would be worse, but I'm not Randy. So he spent the 80s doing that. We talked about Ramtha on the show. Australia had a series of these channelers that were speaking to 40,000-year-old Atlanteans.
Right. And did Randy go around? Did Randy confront Ramtha?
He was invited to Australia. I mean, there is plenty of tape of Randy talking about how goofy Ramtha is and how the voice she does is goofy. And he gets asked by some researchers in Australia, because he became late in life an expert on this stuff. You know, Chinese conference would be like, please come in and speak about traditional medicine, you know, and so you'd get booed in China. Or even parapsychology conferences would be like, come in and talk about why you don't believe in this research, and he'd get booed at these conferences. But Australia wants him to come in and debunk these channelers that are defrauding people. And he says, look, there's no way to debunk this. They're just going to say things in their head in a funny voice, and you can't prove they're not.
Right.
And he's like, but what I can do is do what I did with Project Alpha, and I can send in a fake Ramtha. Yeah. and have him convince everybody's real, and then just show how simple it is to pretend to do this. And luckily, he has recently met at the the Hollywood, Florida public library, like a much younger, good-looking Latino guy, and they both seem interested in each other.
They're on the aisle looking up magic books.
Yeah,
hey, what are you doing here?
Well, the other guy's not that interested in, you know, Randy gets him interested in this weird crusade that he's on. This guy, I think, is an artist. Jose Alvarez, and he renames him Carlos and trains him to go lie to the nation of Australia. And Carlos is kind of uncomfortable with this. And it turns out one of the reasons why he's uncomfortable is because he and Randy become, you know, life partners for about 30 years, married in all but the legal sense.
They were romantic.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. Until finally Obergefell makes it legal. And a week later they're finally married, but you know, they're together for 30 years. But the interesting part of the story is, so at the heart of this debunker truth teller guy, there's this deception that he's not telling anybody that he's gay and living with this, mm-hmm. you know, cute young Venezuelan guy. But the real deception, it turns out, is that Randy and Jose Alvarez both know that he is not Jose Alvarez, that he's a, you know, his name is Davy Pena. He fled Venezuela in his account because of, you know, the anti-gay violence that, you know, that's, you know, in a machista culture, it's tough, you know, gay people are victimized and brutalized, and he wanted out, and Florida was much more welcoming, not now, but then. And
there are places in Miami you can still get away with it.
That's a few places, that are outside the DeSantis zone. But he gets a new identity. You know, a middleman says, "Oh, I'll set you up with this dead guy's social security number. You're Jose Alvarez now." Unfortunately, in the 2000s, the real Jose Alvarez applied for a passport the first time because he wanted to go to his sister's wedding in Jamaica. And that's when INS shows up at the amazing Randy's house.
Oh no!
And arrests his life partner of 30 odd years,
who's been living in America as Jose Alvarez this whole time.
And it turns out becoming a public figure via hoaxing the nation of Australia about channeling the spirit of Carlos was not a good career move, because, you know, he
easy to find.
He's on To Tell the Truth. This guy has a whole fake identity, and he's literally appearing on To Tell the Truth in the early 90s. I'm the real Jose Alvarez. And it looks like at some point he's in front of kind of a deporting judge, and it looks like he may get sentenced with removal. And luckily, you know, at this point, Randy's a kind of an eminence grise. He's no longer the scholarly looking man of his Carson era TV appearances. He's got a long, scraggly beard, increasingly wild eyes, and out of control white eyebrows. He plays it up everywhere with a black cap with a peacock feather in it. He's got a skull-headed cane, of course, and a cape. And it's funny, because you'll see him doing his TED Talk or flirting with waitresses at a diner, and he's just an old guy with his pants pulled up to his, pulled up an extra foot. But then he comes into a party, and he looks like Gandalf. Uh-huh. I mean, he kind of goes from professorial to garden gnome, well into Tolkien.
Yeah.
Harry Potter wizard territory.
In a certain light, you'd be like, ah, fedora bro. But then,
he's got, you know, with that beard.
Yeah, right.
He can sell it. Like, if he had tried that outfit when he was still looking like Lenin in 1958, maybe it would have been a big mistake. But luckily, Jose Alvarez is sentenced just to time served. I mean, he can't seek U.S. citizenship now, so his resident status is really iffy, because he was...
That's too bad.
He was living here in an assumed identity for decades.
But married to an American, so eligible for green card-ish
thing? I wonder how that would work. Yeah, I believe he still lives in Florida. Randy passed away in 2020, I think, well into his 90s.
Well done, Randy.
He's now in heaven, of course, as he often said he would be.
And he comes a knocking.
He wasn't religious, you know. He wasn't anti-religious. He was you know, he would say, you know, I'm an investigator of these things, and that's true of religion as well. You know, it would be impossible for me to prove that a supreme being does not exist. I don't think that's in my domain. I just want people to use a sense of critical thinking about where their faith takes them.
I went to the First Baptist Church of Savannah, and the minister got up and spoke in a funny voice.
Yeah? Was it Ramtha?
No, he said, "Hi, everyone. Welcome to the church, and nice to see you."
That's exactly the voice you expect. That's not a funny voice. But I just kind of like his charitable view of how anybody can fall for this stuff. You know, he didn't see himself as so many of these his acolytes, online acolytes, do, as like the one smug, smart guy in the room exposing the rubes.
Right.
You know, he really felt like these tricks are really good. And you see before your eyes the spoon is bending, or the preacher knows something that he shouldn't know, and you believe.
He was humane.
I think he was. I think he was, you know, because these guys should be great humanists, these debunkers and these skeptics.
Which also feels like another thing missing in the internet era, right? Like, where are exactly the people that are like, I'm an expert on this, but also I get it.
Yeah, or I probably have my blind spots too. You know, there's very little of that for sure. You know, Randy, as a contrarian, didn't believe in climate change for many years.
Really?
Yeah, which kind of, you know, alarmed his friends in the scientific community, because, you know, he's out there being Mr. Science, not pseudoscience. But I think there was just some sense of, you see this in his disciples, Penn and Teller, too, that TV show they did where they would just kind of tear down everything. You kind of see the pleasures of contrarianism can get carried away.
I love Penn and Teller, but I watched that show, and they did an episode on Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah,
where they were like, "This is baloney."
Higher power.
Yeah, how could this possibly work? And I was like, "You guys don't even know what you're talking about. Like, it's not a scam. It's a thing." And you see scientists who go outside of their area of expertise. Yeah, like James Watson with the DNA, DNA guy, who just all of a sudden turned into a eugenicist. It's what happens to them all.
When a scientist gets good enough, suddenly they're like, I need to look at these IQ differences very closely for some reason. But Randy, you know, to the end of his life, there's just beautiful stories of him, you know, duplicating the trick and showing the person that anybody can be fooled. And it's not who you'd expect. There's a story of him at dinner, you know, and the waiter tells him very excitedly that Uri Geller, I know you know Uri Geller, and he ate here recently. And Randy says, "Oh yeah, let me see a spoon," and does Geller's whole act and says that, you know, I now control the whatever, and, you know, and I can make your watch stop and start. And at the end of his meal, the manager comes out and says, "You need to go talk to the server. He's a basket case." And this guy's just on the floor of the kitchen hallway being like, you know, "Ay, ay, ay, El Diablo, you know, like, you've made me participate in the occult."
Yeah.
And Randy's like, no, I'm a magician. I pull rabbits out of hats, you know. And the guy's like, oh, thank goodness you're a magician. But it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just that he liked to laugh at the superstitious. The other story is him speaking at a convention of eminent philosophers, and in his room after, you know, the philosopher is kind of scoffing at how easily people fall for this stuff, and so Randy does a really good trick. You know, he takes out the Gideon Bible and says, "Look at a word," and blah blah blah. He goes through whatever the thing is, and then he pulls out a piece of paper and he writes down the word. "Is this your word?" And the guy's like, the guy actually believes it. Like, the trick is so good that this eminent philosopher is like, "Well, so there are psychic powers. I don't understand. Why are you keeping this hidden from you?" And, you know, just like Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
And Randy has to say, no. Like, I did this just to show you that the tricks are really good, and you've got to be careful. You got to be careful.
Yeah. Well, I wish he could go back and say that to Jacques Lacan.
I mean, I think about that a lot because I have beliefs that are unfalsifiable superstitions.
Yeah.
You know, every Sunday morning if I go to church. So I think a lot about, I guess, what Randy's rule would have been, which is, you know, who is being hurt? I need to make sure that my beliefs do not victimize others in any way, particularly the vulnerable.
I feel like the trick now is that the, you know, science got over into the liberal arts, and there were a lot of liberal arts that started to claim to be scientific. And so that then leads itself to this same kind of, based on some studies, now we're making policy, and people start to believe what they start to claim that it's science, but believe in it like a religion. And it's very, it's, as he says, somebody speaking in a fake voice, but at Stanford talking about what the new education philosophy is, it's impossible to debunk.
A politician with a personality cult is basically founding a religion, but telling you what the policy ends should be.
And that seems increasingly like the a characterizing feature of the age, that we're living in an undebunkable world of pseudoscience.
No more charismatic people at all, I think. We just need to ban charisma.
Come on now.
No.
We
don't need any Uri Gellers out here telling you they can restart your Mickey Mouse watch.
How am I going to put soup on the table?
You need to get really into stage magic. They're the only honest people.
And that concludes The Amazing Randy. Entry 038.EX0711. Certificate number 44722 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that you've made it all the way to an hour and a half in this episode.
Is this going
to
be the longest ever?
I think so. You know, we get every time we do a long episode, some futurelings are like, amazing, that was so awesome. And some honestly are complaining about the extra content. That episode was too long.
Well, we should have just started with, I was thinking maybe we should start with Randy and Geller, but I fell in love with the Houdini stuff.
I know. We both love Houdini.
Maybe we could have done a second Houdini show.
Well, maybe we will. There's so much more to talk about.
Sorry, I'm opening the mail loudly.
And you know, listen to us. We're still talking. We could be out of this show already, but no. We're taking it to the end.
We're opening the mailbag.
Futurelings, don't bother to go to social media. It's all a scam, and I'm debunking it right now. But if you are there already, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Discord, there are futurelings spread widely across all spectra of the internet. I don't need to tell you how to use the internet unless you are so new. Can you possibly? No, you're on the internet. You're listening to a podcast. There's no one so new that they don't know how to use the internet.
Randy was kind of an early podcaster. A lot of these new generation of followers he found by doing an online radio show for decades before podcasting had a name.
Did he do tricks?
Well, you can't do a lot of close-up magic's hard to do over the internet.
Yeah, I guess that's right. You can find Ken with his top shelf Mount St. Helens and New York Times crossword puzzle content on Twitter at Ken Jennings. I'm occasionally on there, just hoping not to get shouted down at John Roderick. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can send us mail, and Ken's got some mail over there, the old mailbag. Send us mail at P.O. Box 55744. Shoreline, Washington, 98155. What have you got, Ken?
Dennis sent us, this is great, harkening back to the omnibus about the generic food labeling movement of the 80s. Mm-hmm. He sent us some scouting badges from his scout troop. They had a generic Camperee.
Oh, that's cute.
With just white and black shoulder badges here.
So Dennis is a longtime listener and a prolific writer and scout master and computer scientist who lives in New England.
That's correct.
And
in fact, he was on the Moby Dick Council. Yes. Like he's so close to New Bedford that they were naming their scout councils after whales.
And he has read Moby Dick half a dozen times, I think. And
he sent in that vein, he sent us pictures of the Lagoda, a miniature whaling ship at a New Bedford museum.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And for you, John, a comic book adaptation of Moby Dick.
You know, my daughter is going to love that so much. When I was reading Moby Dick, she was kind of reading it alongside, but in a abridged, like, kids version of it. And so we talk about Moby Dick all the time, but she loves graphic novels. So.
There's a There's a Bill Sienkiewicz Moby Dick adaptation that's really beautiful, kind of painted art. It looks like those 80s painted Batman and Daredevil things that came out. This is much more of a Classics Illustrated thing by Charlton and DC Comics legends Dick Giordano. I didn't know this existed, but it's fun.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
It's fun. Thank you so much, Dennis.
Does it have all the endings, or does it have the Gregory Peck ending?
It looks very short. Uh-huh. I'm guessing it's missing a lot. I think I'll save the rest of the mail since this show is already 6 hours long.
Okay. All right. In conclusion, at least for my part, please support the show at patreon.com/omnibusproject. Your support helps us stay on the air, and it also makes it easier for me to exist as a charlatan.
Since I don't think any of your charismatic professions should exist in all sectors of life should be run by boring people who cannot stampede others into any kind of fervor at all.
Ken is actually a scientist who stands behind a podium now, and all of the answers are fed to him through his hearing aid.
My charisma-free job hosting Jeopardy should be the model for a new America. Speaking of Patreon donors, this show was actually suggested by... it was Pablo, right?
Pablo. Talked to him on the Zoom the other day.
One of our longest time and most dedicated supporters. He thought Amazing Randy would be a good show, and boy, he sure got his money's worth.
He was not wrong. Now we're at 134 now, Ken.
We got to get out of here. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, and of course, Randy would have said Providence doesn't exist.
Or he would have said, tell me more about Providence.
I would like to investigate Providence. Penn and Teller would have said Providence doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Providence doesn't exist!
Arr!
We hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omni.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?